you might want to keep that text that Jillian just read. You might want to keep that handy, because we're going to be referring to it quite frequently through this story. It's a story that I don't think I've actually ever preached on before. We're going to consider it, taking it apart, if you will, verse by verse. So we begin where it says, when he, Jesus, finished speaking to the people, we have to ask ourselves, which time was this? Was it a particularly memorable time? You're familiar with the Sermon on the Mount, when Jesus spoke, recorded in Matthew chapters 5, 6, and 7. Well, Luke's Gospel presents some similar material in a section that's often called the Sermon on the Plain, P-L-A-I-N. Luke 6:17 tells us when Jesus had come down from the hill with the apostles, he stood on a level place with a large number of his disciples. A large crowd of people was there from all over Judea. And so this episode with Jesus occurs after the Sermon on the Plain, when, as the verse then says, he entered Capernaum. Now, Capernaum was a fishing village on the northern shore of the Sea of Galilee. The disciples Peter and Andrew were from Capernaum. James and John were also from Capernaum. And Capernaum had become sort of a home away from home for Jesus when he was up in the northern regions of Israel around the Sea of Galilee, and he was up there but still too far from his real hometown of Nazareth. He would often hang his hat in Capernaum. The story continues, a Roman captain there had a servant who was on his deathbed. He prized him highly and didn't want to lose him. Bibles often refer to such captains by their Latin name. You've heard of a centurion. It's the same thing, captain or centurion. Centurions were the backbone of the Roman army. Each legion was made up of 60 centuries, 100 soldiers. And each century was commanded by a centurion. A centurion or captain was a veteran soldier who had a position of authority and prestige. He was paid about 15 times the normal rate for an average soldier. These captains or centurions had another role. They were the agents of the Roman Empire in these lands that they occupied. So they served as kind of a broker of imperial resources. If you needed to get a viaduct built, or you needed to have a road built, or there was some trouble with a village nearby, the centurion, the captain, was the guy to know to get things done. Finally, in that verse, note that the captain prized his servant. So this was no heartless soldier we're talking about. The verse continues, when he heard Jesus was back. When he heard Jesus was back. So whether this centurion, whether this captain was new in his post or he'd been there for a long time, he knew that Jesus frequented Capernaum. Continues on, when he heard Jesus was back, he sent leaders from the Jewish community asking Jesus to come and heal his servant. They came to Jesus and urged him to do it, saying, he deserves this. He loves our people. He even built our meeting place. Now let's think about this for a minute. Why would a Roman soldier, send leaders of the local Jewish community to improve his chances for gaining a favor, perhaps? But it's interesting to note that these Jewish leaders advocated on the captain's behalf. I mean, here he is representing the army that is occupying their land, and they're giving the guy a thumbs up. They say, in effect, this representative of the imperial power that's occupying our land is actually a good guy. He's good to us. He even appropriated funds from Caesar to build us a new synagogue. That's what kind of community-minded captain we have here. The verse goes on. So Jesus went with them. When he was still quite far from the captain's house, the captain sent friends to tell him, "Master, you don't have to go to all this trouble." Now again, this was not the captain speaking directly to Jesus. The first time he had sent elders from the Jewish community, this time he sent friends. Not people like other soldiers who had to do whatever the captain ordered, but these were friends who would want to do whatever was best for the captain. Now, since they knew how upset the captain was by his servant's illness, you'd think that the friends would actually say something like this to Jesus. "The captain says he doesn't want to trouble you, but please, he really needs you. His servant's dying is tearing him up." You'd think they'd say something like that, but that's not what they said. They were true to what the captain asked them to say to Jesus on his behalf, which was, as the story continues, "I'm not that good a person, you know. I'd be embarrassed for you to come to my house, even embarrassed to come to you in person." Well, that's obvious. First, he sent leaders to the Jewish community. Now he sends his friends to be intermediaries between himself and Jesus. And you know, it's refreshing that this powerful, commanding person is still in touch with a sincere sense of humility. The friends continue to relay the captain's sentiments, telling Jesus what the captain told them to say. Quote, "Just give the order and my servant will get well. I'm a man under orders. I also give orders. I tell one soldier go and he goes. I tell another come and he comes. My slave do this and he does this." Do you have any movies that if you're channel surfing and you come across a movie, you'll just stop whatever and you'll watch that movie till the end? I got a bunch of those. And one of them is a military courtroom drama starring Tom Cruise, Kevin Bacon, Demi Moore, Jack Nicholson. A movie called A Few Good Men. The plot revolves around a soldier's duty to follow orders. And at one point in this movie, Nicholson's character, the seasoned commander of Guantanamo Bay Naval Station, named Colonel Jessup, responds to questioning from Tom Cruise's character, a young, impertinent Navy attorney named Lieutenant Caffey. Colonel Jessup instructs Lieutenant Caffey. He says this, "We follow orders, son. We follow orders or people die. It's that simple. Are we clear?" Well, the Roman captain is clear. He understands that one with authority needs simply give an order and it will be carried out. The captain views Jesus as just such a person. If Jesus will simply pronounce the desire for that servant to be healed, the captain knows that the power of the divine will assure that it's carried out. Now here comes the climax of the story, verses 9 and 10. Taken aback, Jesus addressed the accompanying crowd, saying, "I've yet to come across this kind of simple trust anywhere in Israel, the very people who are supposed to know about God and how God works." When the messengers got back home, they found the servant up and well. taken aback? Jesus taken aback? Really? Can you imagine what it would take for Jesus to be surprised, astounded, floored by anything or anyone? But realize this. In this whole episode, through this whole exchange of an army guy asking Jesus to come and heal, Jesus consenting to come, then this powerful, influential, authoritative centurion deciding that he himself wasn't worthy of asking for the time and effort of this impoverished, itinerant teacher, preacher, healer. And this captain stating boldly that he absolutely trusts that Jesus can simply order illness to vacate the premises and the captain's servant would be healed. Throughout this whole exchange, Jesus and the captain never see each other. They never meet face to face. So why was Jesus taken aback? Because according to Jesus, not even from his fellow Jews, who supposedly had an inside track to the knowledge of God and God's ways, not even from his fellow Jews did Jesus ever see such confident faith as this non-Jewish Roman officer displayed. The centurion knew with confidence and with certainty that the word of Jesus was as powerful as the presence of Jesus. The captain knew that the power of Jesus to touch and change a life did not depend on his being physically present. To the captain, it didn't make any difference that he and Jesus were separated. It didn't make a difference that they were separated by distance, or social standing, or economic clout, or governmental authority, or military might. It didn't make a difference. And that's the lesson we can take from this episode of the non-meeting between Jesus and the Roman captain. I mean, they were separated by, I don't know, a few hundred yards perhaps. We are separated from the presence of the traveling rabbi of Nazareth, not only by oceans and by continents, but also we're separated by the span of 20 centuries. Still, we are no more disadvantaged by that separation than were that captain and his servant. The word of Jesus remains effective and present to us because of our faith. The word of Jesus maintains its authority and power. It shapes and molds us. It inspires and empowers us. It comforts and heals us. The word of Jesus lives wherever the church is gathered for worship and from wherever it is sent out to serve. The church lives because the word of Jesus lives in us. If the word of Jesus had power only in ancient Palestine, the church would have a past but no present. The church would find small comfort in a book of fond memories of what Jesus once said and what he once did. Captain of that Roman guard stationed in Capernaum had faith, a faith that anticipated the kind of faith that we need today. Presbyterian preacher and author Frederick Buechner described the power of that faith and the depth of that faith when he explained, "Believing in Jesus is not the same as believing things about him, such as that he was born of a virgin, that he raised Lazarus from the dead. No. Believing in him is a matter of giving our hearts to him, of come hell or high water, putting our money on him, the way a child believes in a mother or father, in the way a mother or father believes in their child. Or to paraphrase a Motown standard, we can affirm that there ain't no mountain high enough, ain't no valley low enough, ain't no river wide enough to keep the power of the Word of Jesus from shaping and guiding our lives. Even way over here, even all those centuries later, the power of the Word of Jesus lives in us.